Hello, this is Wildcards, the show where you vote for what we spend our time talking about. And with me for that vote today, I've got Harriet Pryor, I've got Mike Kearney, and I've got Joel Sanderson Murray. Mike, I've been saying your name wrong for coming on 3 years now. I've been told recently that it's Kearney. I've been calling you Mike Kearney, and I can only apologise for that.
I don't know who told you this. It wasn't me, but...
Is it not Kearney? Am I right? I'd like to be right.
I can't tell the difference in what you just said.
I say Kearney, but I will listen to whatever people say as long as it's not Kearney.
Kearney.
I need to know where this information's coming from, Amelia.
My mate, Mike, look, there's just been some whispers. I've heard you're not happy. I've heard that you're considering to submit your contract if your name isn't pronounced correctly.
I'm no diva.
Famously, you do have a long rider for this show, but I hope you're enjoying those red M&Ms that we've had delivered to your house. So the concept for this show, the idea behind it, if you are new here, is that you've been voting on Twitter for a number of topics that you'd like us to talk about within kind of a little group of categories. We're going to talk about what's won out in the public vote, but everyone has got a wild card that they are entitled to play at any point. If they don't want to talk about what's come out in the public vote, we don't always want to. Do you know what? Democracy isn't always right. But hopefully for this first category, it will be. And we're going to start, as we always do, with LFC present. And your options were Pep Linders, lovely, lovely Pep, Curtis Jones, lovely, lovely Curtis. Or more concerningly, and to be honest with a little bit more to get into, is the forwards contract situations is plural. So what I'm going to do, we've got three of us here, and I've got four names I'd definitely like to talk about. So I'm going to give you one each, but feel free to chip in on others as you go. And Joel, I'll come to you first with Salah, which is it's the big one, isn't it? It's the one that everyone wants to talk about. But yeah, we've got 18 months-ish, give or take, left. We've been told that there's been positive talks. We've been told that he wants to stay. We've been told it's not in his hands anymore. And we've been told that he's not asking for anything crazy. Your definition of crazy, obviously, being kind of within the grand scheme of the craziness that is football wages, as opposed to kind of, you know, what I'm on, for example, for just doing my job every year. But he wants nothing crazy. And that's probably in comparison to what a lot of other lads are getting, which is fair enough. But I mean, how do you see it going? I'm not entirely worried because I don't sense that Klopp is worried, but is it something that's kind of keeping you up at night?
It has been keeping me up at night, but, you know, over the past, like, year, let's say. But it's something that, I don't know, right here, right now, I'm probably a bit less concerned than I was a year ago. Well, mainly after Klopp's recent press conference where he did speak about it and he seemed pretty chill and he seems pretty chill about a lot of things. But I think when you know he's agitated, it comes out because he can't hide it, can he? I think he's okay about it, and I think it will get sorted at some point. And I think the shout has been just given whatever he wants, but I think that's kind of, you know, that was easy enough. They would have done it, and Liverpool would do it. But maybe I can't imagine he is asking for anything crazy. But if you're taking Kevin De Bruyne's reported wages of like 350k, 400 a week, and he's supposedly the highest paid player in the Premier League, let's say, then I can understand why Salah would want that or want, you know, money in relation to that. It's always going to be a little bit concerning until it gets done, but it could be one of them where maybe it is done and Liverpool are very good at waiting until the right moment to announce it. And maybe that is the case, and maybe telling Salah to speak to GQ just to keep the plot thickened a bit and keep us all on our toes. So yeah, I'm relatively chill about it, but I think that is the main one, like you said, Amelia. Like, that is the one that more than any one of the front three, that's the one we all want to get done. And I think it'll be all right. I don't want to think about the future where that doesn't get done, to be honest with you.
We're not thinking about that future. We're not going down that road, not at all. No. But just on that GQ interview, there's obviously a bit more that he says in it, but he talks about wanting to feel appreciated, which I found interesting because he talks about, you know, it's kind of a given how much he loves the club, how much he loves the fans. But then he talks about kind of what he feels he's contributed to this Liverpool side, the amount of time that he's been here. And in the quotes, he kind of talks about wanting to feel like that's recognised and wanting to feel like he's appreciated, which I think is an entirely valid feeling to have, whatever walk of life you're in. But when you've helped Liverpool do what he's helped us do, I can completely see why you want to say, all right, and now show me how much I mean to you. But you touched on there that kind of the question that we've all got in our heads of, like, do we just give him whatever he wants? We can't doubt what he contributes. With 23 goals in 26 appearances so far this season, we're absolutely feeling the loss of him at the minute. Where do you draw the line in terms of that? Should we just give him what he wants, kind of within, has it got to be within reason, or do we just go, we can't be without him, so whatever it takes to get this deal done, let's do it?
That's a difficult one. I think that's probably what's actually holding it all up, because the thing is, as we all know, the way FSG do their business and the way they've set their model on, it is more about sort of giving loads of high contracts to players who are sort of between like 21 to 24 and then building them up. And then when it gets to above 30, you don't want to give them a contract that's going to be breaking their wage structure, which it seems like they do have. And obviously we don't know 100% what that limit is. But, you know, they've played this model for years and this is how they do their business. And you can understand that to a certain extent. But the thing is, when it comes to Salah, he is an anomaly and he is a massive outlier where, you know, he's not going to be a usual 30-year-old plus player where, you know, I don't think anyone could imagine him at 34. We don't know for certain, but you can't imagine it being 34, dropping that much, that he's not going to be, what, you know, doing the same business that he is doing. You know, he's probably going to be on to score 40-plus goals this year. And maybe when he gets to 34, that'll drop to 25-plus. But that's still 25 goals a season from a player. That's still incredible. Probably would be top scorer in most teams in the world. So yeah, I mean, when you sort of answer your question about where you draw the limit, it's difficult because money's so skewed in football. I'm not sure what the answer to that is. And obviously, there's talk about, you know, would that disrupt the dressing room? Does that make other players unhappy? But I think, you know, a lot of the players are happy with what they've got now, because it's all, a lot of them signed new contracts recently. And I think if Salah gets, let's say, £100,000, £150,000 more a week than most players, they'll be fair enough, because you'll be like, oh, most look at the days a lot of times. Fair enough, like, you do whatever you want.
I'm firmly in the giving what you want camp, just for the record. Harry, I was going to ask about Mane next, but let's do Bobby, whose contract expires at the same time. So he's going to be nearly 32 when his contract expires. And if you'd asked me this last season, I would have had a very different season to now, given how much we've seen of Jota and given how much he feels like he's emerged as a kind of alternative for Bobby, and how it kind of feels like we might be seeing the start of something with Jota, whereas we're potentially kind of coming towards the end of what we're going to see of Bobby for Liverpool. I'm not saying that we're not going to extend it. I guess I just wonder, in comparison to the rest of the front three, do you think that Bobby's extension has more of a question mark around, potentially not Mane's, but do you think that Bobby's is one we need to think a bit more of in terms of what else are we going to get out of him? And should we, instead of kind of throwing money at this, be looking at the kind of the succession, I always say it wrong, I'm sorry, the plan that comes after Bobby. What comes after Bobby? Is it just Bobby? Or do we, are we looking at Jota increasingly filling that space? Do we extend it?
Yeah, I think Bobby, for me, out of the three that you've already mentioned, is probably the biggest question mark, just purely because of his age and the fact that if you're looking purely at his stats and the sort of, you know, the creativity and his impact and his pace and all those things, that maybe they have slowed down a little bit. And I caveat all of this by saying that I absolutely rate him as one of the best forwards, and he's so underrated. He's so selfless that, you know, even the other night when you see him give the ball to Minamino when he could have taken a shot himself, like, those things are not written into the stats. And I think that's always really important to say, because you can't look at just a player's stats when you're thinking about their impact. And his impact throughout the last few seasons at Liverpool has been incredible. However, I do think if you're looking at those front three, he is going to be the one that, if FSG let it go, I think they would be the least angry about. And I don't know if that's a good measure of, like, whether we should keep him on or not, but I think people would sort of accept that the age he's at and the sort of pace that he seems to be slowing down a little bit, that would be okay. I think a lot of it, obviously you want to handle them all separately, but a lot of it does depend on what happens with Salah, because that will have a knock-on effect on what they decide to do with the big two. I think that for me, you mentioned the succession there, and that has got to be at the forefront of their minds, because if you're letting three players go at the same time or all expire at the same time, which I don't think they do, but this is what the current situation is, then you need to be thinking, right, who is irreplaceable? Who can we maybe bring someone to replace? And you mentioned Jota there. He's obviously come in and fulfilled that sort of false nine role when we haven't got Bobby really, really well. So it is possible, but it's going to have to be a lot of forward planning. So I'd like to see them, with Bobby, do a little one-year extension situation where they just sort of keep him on. He's probably happy to stay on, because where else would he go at the moment where he'd get regular, you know, regular game time as such a high caliber club, probably nowhere else. So maybe, you know, maybe they just do a year and he's happy with that. His terms aren't, I imagine, going to be as high as Salah and Mane. So I'd like to see him stay at Liverpool a bit longer, because I just think he's class and I rate him so much, but he's going to be third on the priority list, I think, for FSG.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And I think you're right in saying, in terms of, it's not right to look at the stats, and it's also not right to kind of try and suggest, and I hope it didn't seem like I was, that Jota is a like-for-like replacement for Bobby.
No, but they kind of fulfill the same position, don't they? And they show that without Bobby in the team, Jota does come in and fill that role quite nicely, where you're not like, oh, we need Bobby back. Whereas when you don't have Salah, you're like, oh my gosh, we need Salah back. So
100%. Yeah. I think we're at a very clear crossroads with all three of them, but I think the kind of the jeopardy that feels like it's involved in those crossroads dwindles as you go from Mo to Bobby. But in the middle of that, Mike Kearney, my friend Mike Carney, Sadio Mane, the love of my life and my favourite Liverpool footballer, who expires at the same time. Obviously, his form hasn't been the same recently, or consistently the same recently, as we've previously seen of him. But I think at the minute, we really, really see what we miss without him, with him being at AFCON. And I've seen a few things about kind of a rumoured replacement that Liverpool are supposedly eyeing up. For me, I don't want anything other than Sadio, but I don't know how long that extension is, and I don't know whether FSG feel the same way, but how do you feel?
Sadio's interest, isn't it? You can't really talk about Sadio without talking and mentioning the other three at some point, because they've been all three together, haven't they, for a long while, and we've seen Jota come into it now, and Jota can play through the middle. We've seen him on the right, we know that doesn't really work, unless that was just a system thing of the week with the Arsenal game, and we've seen him cut in from the left and be more effective there. We've seen him possibly be able to do two positions in the front three, and maybe that we'll, the business we'll do maybe in the summer, we'll probably give a big indication of what we're going to do with one of, if not both of, Sadio and Bob, as Firmino started calling them, Fabinho, sorry, Bob, just going around to Bob's. I don't know. I feel as if Sadio has always been a little bit, like everyone knows how good they are, but something about me, I always just feel that Sadio quite never gets the credit that sometimes he deserves, even though he's fantastic, and we've got memorable goals for him. The first season he comes in without Salah, you know, he's phenomenal, but he gets the injury, doesn't he, in the derby in the April, and he'd scored 15 goals at that point, and you'd be mad to suggest that he probably wouldn't have gone on and got 20 with the last 8 games of the season that he missed there, mate. Like the form he was in that season, he'd missed a month from AFCON that year as well, and he'd come back and scored 2 in the game, he'd come back in against Tottenham. He's evolved, probably one of the most out of the front three, because we've seen him do all three positions. We've seen him do the Firmino impression a couple of times when he played through the middle. That day he scores a mad back heel where he bounces it over. Don't know who was in goal for Watford at the time. I just want to say Sean Plum. It might have been Ben Foster, but it was some fella in goal. Couldn't deal with Sadio Mane just being absolutely audacious. He played on the left after the first season. He played on the right, so he's been superb for us. I just feel as if we're getting to a point now where they're probably all going to be 32, 33, Andy, when they're turning 33 in the season that the deal runs out. And there'll be someone somewhere looking at numbers who isn't me saying, like maybe Harriet suggesting there, a one-year deal might be sensible with one of them. I just don't know who it is. And we don't know, it might even be worth doing for both. Because I don't think we're past the point of selling any of them now for profit. I think even with Mo Salah, you could get a lot of money for him if you wanted to. But what would be the point? We've got the best player in the world playing for your football team, and if you're not into having that in your team, then what are you in football for? You know, even the lower league supporters will one day dream of having a player as good as him. So we've got to do as much as we can to keep him. And I'm sort of at ease with the other situation. I think whatever will be with it, sort of thing. I've watched them play football for Liverpool, and they've been part of my memories that I'll be telling people about for years to come. And if we get to see a year or two more of them, then I'll be happy with that. But I also would like to start seeing some sort of succession planning falling in now in the summer. You know, there's lots of talk, isn't there, around possibly Gerard Bowen last season. He's had a good season this season, so it sort of makes sense as a Liverpool signing. But does he play on the left? we don't know at the minute, but the longer we can keep them around and the higher they can perform, the highest level they can perform to, will only benefit Liverpool. There's no real point in selling Sadio Mane for 20 million or Roberto Firmino for the same.
No, you're right. You're right that there has to be the kind of the long-term plan can't be just keep them around forever, because they can't be, you know, they're not going to be the footballers that they are forever. I think what you said about Sadio there in terms of not getting the credit that he deserves is the thing that worries me, because I somehow feel like we're more likely to move him on than we are Bobby, because despite being one of the best footballers in the world, I feel like Sadio Mane is still underrated for how brilliant he is and for what he does for Liverpool. And that's why I worry that we may think less of moving him on than we really should, because I think he's worth more to us. But on the kind of the flip side of that, well, not the flip side, he's great. You know, he's still useful at times. But can we talk about Origi quickly? And what happened to Big Divock? I mean, I think he goes, doesn't he? But and I think
we've seems like we've been saying that for forever and a day.
Oh, yeah, we've said it for a long time.
I don't think he goes anywhere. I'm not sure Divock Origi is going anywhere anytime soon. I think he absolutely just loves being at Liverpool. He's got a great gang of mates. He's just having a lovely time. He's scoring goals in Champions League finals. He's coming on off the bench. He's getting paid a good wage. He likes where he's living. I just think he's happy. I think he would have to be pushed before, what's the saying? You know what I mean. He'd have to be before he jumps.
No, I don't know. I just think, so after the Champions League, after we won the Champions League, I remember us having this exact same conversation where we said, you know, has he achieved everything he can with the club, or does he want a little bit longer to kind of kick about? Do you know what I mean? Like, have a nice time, do what he's been doing so far. Is he happy with that? And I think there does have to come a point in your career where you think, I haven't got that long left, and am I happy to just be a fifth choice to be brought in with 10 minutes left? Do you know what I mean? Like, there must come a point where you're realising that there's only so much left of your career and that you must want it to be a bit more active than it is. Like, a kind of semi-retirement might not appeal to him. I don't know. What do you reckon, Joel?
Yeah, I think it's a good point, because he's achieved a lot at Liverpool, obviously, where he's won the Champions League and Premier League. So you can say he's done that, but maybe he does want to go somewhere and be the main guy and be the main striker. But we don't know the only Divock can answer that. And how long is his uni course for, by the way? Because if he's still got another year on that,
it's a good point. He's done matches, hasn't he? So I think that almost felt like a legacy thing, though, the scholarship that he gifted to the uni. Yeah. It was almost like he knows he's going to be going, so that's something that he'd like to remain in the city after he's gone. I don't know that. I mean, I like to guess.
I think there's something that speaking from the sort of looking at the club's point of view on this as well, is they might offer him something in the end, or if they might have already. They'll be looking for who's going to be the Origi replacement as well, who's going to be the fifth choice striker who's going to come in and, you know, maybe take his minutes. And there's a strong possibility you won't be able to find someone as good as him. And obviously, you know, with Origi, there's obviously limitations to his talents and his abilities, but he's still a pretty good striker. He still do a job for pretty much all the Premier League clubs, you know, bar maybe the top four or six, let's say. But there's a possibility they've looked at what's out there and done the scouting, which we know they do extensively, and they can't find someone who's going to come in and do that job. And they might try all they can to keep him. And I won't be surprised that, like Harry said, Divock's not going anywhere.
I mean, I wouldn't be sad about it, I won't lie. Divock being brought on for the last 10 minutes when I'm taking my kid the match. But LFC Past is what we're going to talk about next. And your options were the 2012 League Cup final, Christian Benteke, or your favourite Cup semi-final, which is a nice easy one, because I just get to ask you, what was your favourite Cup semi-final? And Mike, I'll come to you first, since you were last on the last one. So what is your favourite Cup semi-final that you experienced?
I mean, it feels Route 1, doesn't it? I feel as if we need to stipulate that if it feels like the mad obvious one. Like, Barcelona is obviously going to be forever in my memory, but I feel as if I owe it to myself not to say that one. I'm going to say the FA Cup semi against Everton. The Andy Carroll 2-1. I think it was like the 86th or 87th minute winner. Because, let me tell you, I've not had quite a day like that for a while. Probably up until aforementioned Divock slotting and in the 96 minute derby. But that day for me will be, I remember, so in everyone's group of mates or family in the pool, you've got Everton and the pool sort of mixed. It's maybe not as much as what people like to make out, but it definitely happens. You've got blue mates, you've got blue aunties and stuff like that. And one of me blue mates, I remember we watched a game together or something. I can't remember what it was, but it was an FA Cup one, and he was getting dead cocky. And I was like, you know what? If we ever play each other in this cup run, I'd have money with you now that we bat you. And we didn't bat them, like, but the bet was, if Everton won, I'd have to pay him. If Liverpool won, he'd have to pay me. And I remember at the time, Jelavich was on fire, wasn't he? They loved him better than Suarez. and all that sort of chat. They love a bandwagon. And they climbed aboard the one that Nikita Jelavich was driving for a good 6 months. And I remember thinking, you know what? I had a bet that day. I'd done Jelavich first goal and Liverpool to win 2-1. And I won a lot of money. I drank it all. I had a really, really, really good day. And we don't really... So my sort of support generation doesn't really have that many FA Cup wins, massive against Everton. There's been finals in the past, haven't there, which I've never really experienced. It's always great when you beat them, obviously, but can you imagine the stress that would be leading up to the day of the final? You'd be nervous until it was done, sort of thing. But the semi gave us a bit of a glimpse of that, and it was it was lovely coming back from Wembley that day. In really, really, really good spirits. And we're fortunate, aren't we? I could have said loads, yeah. But I've gone for the one where I'm remembering my day out and how sunny it was, and or wasn't it great? And my mate's phone all of a sudden not getting signal for a good 6 or 7 hours after the final whistle. It was a great day.
It's about the day as much as anything else, isn't it? I know it's not a semi, but we were talking about the possibility of a final, not that I want to jinx anything. But Adam's not here to tell me that I can't jinx it. But the final would be... So sorry, if we beat Arsenal tonight, the final will be the day after our wedding. And I thought fully floated the concept of us cancelling day one of the honeymoon so that we can go to Wembley and back on a bus. But we'll see how tonight goes, shall we? But you've got to, I don't know, it's the memories, isn't it? And it's the days. What was Pep saying? Pep was saying in the press conference yesterday that it's about giving people big games and giving people memories and giving people that kind of feeling. And that's what it's about, isn't it? So it's like, it's not about the funniest or the biggest or the best, whatever the scoreline, it's about the day you have around it. But Joel, I don't know if yours is more informed by the day than the result, but what is your favourite cup semi-final memory?
No, mine was probably a bit before I was legally allowed to drink, but it would be the where we beat Chelsea 2-1 in the FA Cup semi at Old Trafford, which is pretty much all it is. I mean, we've won at that place against that team. And I think at the time, obviously, so I think that would have been 05, 06, because I think it was the year after Champions League, wasn't it? So I think beating them in the Champions League was incredible, because that year, obviously, I think we finished 30 points, or at least 30 points behind them in the year. And then I don't think we get that much closer the year after. It's when they win the league, obviously. And I think it was... Chelsea had become the dominant force in the Premier League at that time, and they looked unbeatable, and even scoring a goal past them was something that was a real accomplishment, because I think the year before they achieved the record of the best defence in the league, and I think that stat still remains in terms of how many goals Petr Cech conceded. So they were this like imperishable force, and I think just Liverpool having this effect over them when it comes to cup competitions, we just did them, and we've done twice in a row, and they really, really wanted to win, obviously, the year before, and they had this sort of the build-up. I remember the build-up being about their revenge, and then obviously us going to Old Trafford, it was a time where maybe we'd choke in that, and we were incredible that day, and Luis Garcia scores and Robalta against them, and this one definitely goes in, and it was just beautiful. And I think just I had this thing with Liverpool under Rafa, is that I never was that confident of us in the league until obviously we go on and challenge the title a couple of years after. But whenever it came to cup competitions, I don't think there's anyone better at that time in the world for being able to coach a team through a cup competition. And it was always almost a bit of confidence sport and arrogance about how Benitez was able to sort of manoeuvre his way through it. So yeah, it was that one, just being able to beat that team at that place was just beautiful.
That's a brilliant one. Harriet, what is yours?
I'm wild carding. I'm going early.
Yeah, you know, I was just thinking, not a wild card yet. They'll all be using them in general sport, throwing them out there. But no, this is good. When they don't get used, I feel like the show somehow loses something. So yeah, throw it out there.
Well, I picked all the categories this week and I'm still like, oh, I don't want to talk about that. And I picked them all. So I don't know. I'm just letting myself down, it feels. But anyway.
It's a random one because it absolutely stinks of John Gibbons, the random
one. No, he's off on paternity now. So it was me. It was, yeah. The Wordle one, it was a last minute shout. Anyway, we'll get to that later. But
been brief about Wordle. I felt like the hand of John Gibbons had come in for the random category.
Well, maybe it was just in my head. Yeah.
Play wild card.
I'm going to do a bit of 2012 League Cup final chat because I'm just like, you know, when you like remember these things from when you, so I was probably 15, 10 years ago now, wasn't it? So 15. And you sort of remember where you were and what's going on, but you don't really remember the details of the match fully. And then you watch it back and you're like, that was absolutely mad. And it was absolutely mad. And I've just watched the highlights back and it said on it that Skirtle's goal was the first at the new Wembley. And I just don't know if I believe it. Like the first ever goal at the new Wembley. That's what it says. Anyway, that's a side note. If anyone wants to tweet me and confirm or deny whether that was true or not, or whether Sky Sports have got it wrong, then let me know. But I love it when I'm watching these highlights of finals and then we go a goal down and you know that we're inevitably like eventually going to win it. So you can just enjoy it and it doesn't matter. So when we go a goal down against Cardiff, against all odds, and then obviously you see Skirtle score the goal and it goes to extra time. And then honestly, everything that happens after, Gerrard misses a penalty and then eventually it all ends because Gerrard's cousin misses his last penalty for Cardiff. And the irony, it's like so full circle and such a full story of a cup final. Like it has everything that I just thought I wanted to talk about it. And also what blows my mind a bit is that you see Jordan Henderson in the pylon at the end and then you've got Gerrard in there and Suarez is there and it's all these different eras of Liverpoolness and it's all in one cup final. Had it all, so... There's my wild card.
No, I'm not an excellent wild card to play. I like when it's played for a good reason, not I can't be asked talking about this reason. Right, let's move on to the needliest general football category that we'll ever have. Your options were FIFA the best, Lewandowski, or the next Everton manager. And no prizes for guessing what one. We're going to talk about the next Everton manager. Now, the way I'd like to do this, and again, I had four, but we can share them out. We've got three of us. I've got some names and I would like you to pitch them to me as
God, this is hard.
They're all there and you're making the case for this as the next Everton manager. Take it how you want, but I'd like you to talk me through them. Joel, you've got Wayne Rooney. Tell me how do you see it going?
Shit. Is this like kind of The Apprentice now? Is it? Yeah, this was after.
You can give me a logo if
can't
you want.
Can't believe Amelia sends it to Karen Brady.
My fucking dreams. the strong Tory power. But sorry, go on.
Wayne. Okay, so he deserves the job because he's a club legend. And he's never done anything to disrupt that or defy that or ever go against the badge, such as kissing another club's badge. That was something that he would never have done in his past. You cut him and he bleeds blue. So, I mean, for that alone, he deserves a job. But on a half serious note, I guess, I don't think he's cut out for the job, but... You know, he's doing a half good job at Derby County and he could be on the way to pulling off one of the best stories in English football. So, you know, if he does that, fair play to him and fair play to him sticking around in that situation because I imagine a lot of ex-footballers having their first managerial job from that generation wouldn't have done that. So for that alone, for his integrity and honesty as a human being, and the fact that he could pull off a miraculous recovery, survival job, that alone, he deserves a job for that.
All right. So that was, thank you for your presentation. you can hand back the clicker. You've left the boardroom. There's no world in which it's going to be Wayne Rooney, is there? Surely.
I think it is. I think it's going to happen. I'm honestly
a cheeky little smile as if he's convinced.
I want it to. I'm here for the needle of it all. I'm here for the needle of it all.
One of many ways in which it could get funnier. It's not the only way it could get funnier because there's a lot of ways this could go all of the time. But I mean, do we think? I mean, I know that, like, you know, bookies odds, whatever. But you know, they're saying it's a strong option. I just don't see them doing it.
I could, yeah, but if I was him, I wouldn't. I think they could do it, and I think they will do it because of the romance about it. But yeah, if I was him, I wouldn't do it because that job's going to come around nearly annually. It has been coming around yearly. If I was him, I would stick and do the Derby thing. Mm. And if he does that, like, his reputation would be at an all-time high. I don't think anyone would ever scupper it. So I'd just stick tight and see where he is. I mean,
for him, like, genuinely for him, there's a case of Everton doing it before he gets too good, if that makes sense. Like, he could actually be a good manager, and as Joel said, the stuff he's doing with Derby, everyone had them down this year, and if he ends up going from Derby to somewhere else and then doing a little bit too good and then getting a big European job, I don't see it happening, maybe. But there's the unknown with Everton that might make them pull the trigger a little bit too early, which is the only way I think I can see it happen. I'm not saying he's doing a terrible job at bad Derby, like, I fully understand what he's doing. I just see it feels like Everton are a bit twitchy. So they'll do it thinking that they might miss him on the way up, if you get me.
I get you. I from an entirely personal point of view, I'm in it for the scandal. Like, I really hope that we get proper, funny, personal stories that come out of it. I'd like Wayne back. I mean, he won't move back to Merseyside necessarily because they're already pretty comfortable where they are, aren't they? But I'd like some of that, some of the hilarity, some of the tabloid filler to kind of be coming back to our area. It would make my life a lot more exciting. Harriet, right, so welcome to the boardroom. We've had one really good presentation so far. It's quite a tough act to follow, actually. We're feeling
really stressed.
But I'd like you to pitch to us Martinez, please.
I thought you were going to say Frank Lampard and I was going to leave the boardroom. you know what? I'm backing him for the pure, like, hilarity that would be if Everton's manager was also managing a national team. I just think it'd be funny. Like, what? Let's just give it a go. Because if all else fails for him, he's still going to have Belgium. So why not? That's my whole argument. And also, like, bit of unfinished business. He's left on a terrible note. Let's add that. Maybe he wants to come back. He feels like he's got a bit of unfinished business, a bit of bad blood. He wants to put the plasters, you know, back on, cover it all up, make sure everything's okay, wants to make people happy again. It's just left, and since he's left, has just had this gaping hole of, why don't Everton fans still love me? And he wants to kind of make that better again. So, but again, let's bring it back to some realisticness, realism, I don't know, whatever the word is. Reality.
I'll let her get there. She's getting.
I got there. Bring it back to reality. He's got, like, a national team.
Yeah.
With a World Cup coming up in literally less than a year's time. There's not even a, like, clear end of season break where he could make the switch because of the World Cup.
Yeah.
And one of the teams, you know, the front runners, arguably, even though they haven't won anything, he wants to go and achieve that. So he's not going to leave, is he?
I think it's implausible just from a practicality basis. Yeah.
And they're not going to let him do both. They're not going to let him do that. And why would you want a manager? Like, imagine if Klopp was also manager of, like, Germany or something. That wouldn't feel right. I don't like that concept that you're managing a national team and a club team. I think you keep them separate. You do one and then the other if you want to do that.
So yeah, it's not a job share, is it? He's not got flexi time.
I hope my presentation was good, but actually.
But outside the boardroom, we all know how you really feel.
Yeah.
So I think that if it's an either or, he's choosing managing a national side, isn't he? Or managing his side. I just think that's how it's going to go. But yeah, practicality may be the one that gets in the way there. But thank you for your presentation. And Mike, welcome. It's been a great day here in the boardroom. We've had some lovely sandwiches. But finally, our last presentation will be on the topic of Frank Lampard. If you'd like to just talk us through why.
Unlucky.
Why you feel he should be the next manager of Everton. Mike's left.
I'll play the role. I think my client Frank would like to come in because, you know, he's got experience of you know, being at Derby and getting them close to promotion. You know, we've took lots of loan players from other clubs like Liverpool and Chelsea, developed them quite well. He went back to their clubs, one where he went to manage Future, and he's made him help him break through into the first team at a top four side. One, he developed a career of, helped him internationally, Harry Wilson, got Liverpool some money for a return on their interest. And he's at a good club now in Fulham, looking for promotion again. So he's clearly good at developing players. You know, I think the crowd will get on board with them. What would it be in the opposite of the Gerard Lampard debate? Really suits the Gladys Street down to the ground, I think. They get right behind them, and you know, they all of a sudden be, you know, Team Frank all the way. And to be honest, you know, his team that he managed ended up going, you know, and being capable to win a Champions League. And, you know, some people might see that as a failure because he wasn't the man who was on the podium. But I think Everton Football Club, you know, they can really get behind the fact that this man has, you know, his fingerprints are all over that team. I think that we could spin that into a positive, and maybe he's the right fit.
Mike, I think you might have won. I think you might have convinced me that Frank Lampard's the next manager at Everton.
I don't believe so.
With such conviction.
And can you do the Alan Sugar point, please, Amelia? I mean,
you've got my investment, Mike. no, God knows what they'll do, but I know I've had fun thinking about it. but that was fun. Thank you all for engaging.
I'd like to state I do not agree with any of the things I did say.
Right, let's move on to general sport, shall we, as a little palate cleanser after that. Your options were Andy Murray, the Australian Open, Usyk versus AJ, the second to take again, basically. We talked about that last time. I think that won last time they fought. But anyway, Australian Open won. So you can talk about the fight if you would like to, if you'd like to play a wild card. As is a theme on wildcards, I know very little about it. But let's move on to the Australian Open. So, I mean, Harriet, do you want to talk about the actual Open, or should we talk about the funny thing around it?
The drums, all the drums.
Let's talk about the drums, sorry, because it's what we're here for. You crack on.
I'm a bit sad that Raducanu and Murray are both out now, because I was backing both of them, and I think Andy Murray is just like, he's just a laugh, isn't he? For someone that is perceived as so boring, he's actually quite funny.
He's got a really good sense of humour.
Really good sense of humour.
On all of the, like, I feel like I agree with him on absolutely everything.
Says all the right things. Got a mum who's mad on Twitter. Like, what more can you want, really? So. Bit sad that they've both gone out. Raducanu, like, I'm really backing her, and I feel like she just had a big 2021, and she needs like a few weeks out. But you know, she'll be fine. She'll come back. And then the Djokovic situation is just like, it's absolutely wild. And also, can we like all think about Dejan Lovren backing him on Instagram and saying, you know,
to be honest, I really try not to.
It's so funny. It's so funny. And my dad messaged me this week because he follows all the like Liverpool players, past and present, on Instagram. He's put Dejan Lovren, my first delete. And I've gone, I don't know what delete means in an Instagram context. I don't know if he thinks they're friends. I don't know. He's gone from my dad's Instagram. So take that, Dejan Lovren. But no, I think Djokovic is, do you know what? For someone that's like so adamant that he wants his personal freedom, I just feel like he's talking about it all too much. And this week I've seen that he's done this mad thing, that he's invested in this company that's trying to find a cure for COVID. And it's like, hello, vaccines. Like,
hello. We've already got one of them.
Yeah. So he's just mad. And that's all I can really say about it, is that everyone is very entitled to their opinion, what they want to do, blah, 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 blah. But you have to take what you're choosing to do with the consequences that come with it. And if you're not willing to do that, then unfortunately you're going to get backlash, and you're going to have to, you know, be kicked out of countries. And that's the rules. Like, that's, you know, no one's designing that to hinder Novak Djokovic. It's just the way of the world now. So take what comes from that, basically.
100%. It's a conversation I've had to have, not at an elite sporting level, with many members of my family, but that, like, going on holiday isn't a human right. Like, getting to travel the world isn't a human right, and nor is getting to play in, like, in sporting tournaments. It's something that if you want to do, you've got to engage with the conditions of, and he chose not to engage with the conditions of it. So yeah, that's my thoughts on it. I also think it's a shame that it kind of detracts from the competition, and it kind of makes it all about that. And it's what this one will be remembered for, is the kind of the storm around that, rather than, you know, the athleticism and people's entire careers leading up to moments that are happening. It'll be all about a fella kicking off about something. But Joel, is it one that you can play a wild card if you want, but have you been watching the Australian Open? And if so, Have you been enjoying the actual sport or just engaging with the drama?
No, I mean, I was going to use my wild card on this one, but I think Wordle's going to have to get in for that. So I will. I mean, I've been keeping in touch with the action itself, but just a bit more of a simple note on the drama of it. Like, I think the worst and the most dangerous part about what Djokovic has done or been doing, and it's similar to sort of what we've had with Joshua Kimmich, the Bayern Munich player who spoke openly about not getting the vaccine and being on, you know, the reasons why he didn't do that. And then he got it, he got COVID, and then there's been a lot of issues with his lungs, which isn't nice, but at the same time, you know, people might want to say, well, that's what happens. But the danger of those two people doing it in the positions they are, you've got the poster boy of German football, and you've got, you know, one of the best tennis players in the world, and has been one of the best tennis players in the world, doing that it's dangerous, because it gives the anti-vaxxers or people who believe there's some big global conspiracy theory, it gives them ammunition, and that these two are going against it, then obviously they're right. I'm going to believe them rather than believe the experts and the scientists. And that's also the caveat that there are obviously people who can't get the vaccine for legitimate health reasons, or that, you know, should be sort of, like, you know, sort of given mention to there as well. But yeah, I just think it's just, he's just a tit, isn't he? He's just a bad tit, and that's what my point is. He's just a bad gobshite.
I think the difficulty with it as well is that when you're trying to have conversations with people around the vaccine, you're able to point to, like, well, look at all of these intelligent, you know, knowledgeable people that have chosen to get the vaccine. Look at all of these experts that are telling us to do it. I am inclined to side with those people. And kind of you're able to phrase it as, like, and the people that aren't are kind of involved in this fringe, let's call it a conspiracy theory for a lot of people. It's hard then when you have very prominent sports people who people respect and look up to adopting that opposition view, because then it's kind of harder to go, well, I'm listening to experts, and someone's going, well, I'm going to listen to this really fit fella who looks after himself, who this, who's respected, who's moneyed, who's intelligent, who's got all these things. It kind of makes it harder to go listen to the voices that are valid and legitimate, because for a lot of people, Djokovic's voice is a valid and legitimate one. Again, I'm trying not to delve too far into it, but it's hard not to because it's incredibly frustrating. But Mike, have you been watching the Australian Open? And if so, have you been enjoying it?
I haven't, you know. Obviously, all the news around it and stuff like that was very much a part of my daily reading thing, because I just found it incredibly funny, to be honest. Like, people can have their own opinions and stuff like that, and, you know, I've obviously got mine, everyone who listens got theirs, but I found it very funny that panned out the way it did for him, and, you know, all the best to him. But as everyone said, like, it's it's fairly clear, it's not just, you know, there's actual numbers that you can go and see now. So yeah, whatever's with him. I was actually going to play my wild card and talk about Andy Murray.
Do it.
To achieve what he's done in sport in the era he's achieved it in tennis is when you think about it, phenomenal. Roger Federer, Rafael Nadal, the aforementioned Djokovic, whatever you think of him off the court, he's a superb tennis player, and Andy Murray. And it was like branded as like the best four male tennis players that we've had in, you know, a long, long while. And he was the first British tennis player, wasn't he, to win Wimbledon for a long, long while. Although every time he lost, he was referred to as the Scottish. But we all know why that is. I just think for him to have the pressure on and to get to a level where he's got to, and then come back from this hip injury he's had. And, you know, it must be tough, but the tennis players have got to be one of the fittest athletes, haven't they, really? Because there's a lot of running, and it's like the mechanics of tennis, just in terms of when you're on your own doing it, you know, there's a lot of injuries you can get, your shoulder, you need to roll your ankle, you know, Andy's obviously had hip problems, but just him as an actual tennis player to have won what he's won in the era where he could probably arguably say, you know, that they could be the best ever tennis players. It's a debate that we always have in sport, won't we? You know, in terms of football teams gone past, loads of other sports, like boxing's another one where you can say, oh, maybe there's the best fighter of any era or like a generation, or maybe ever. We'll never know, because like in Muhammad Ali will never be able to box Tyson Fury, or you know, Mike Tyson, and you know, Andy Murray might never be able to play the best tennis players of the years gone by. But what he can do is do exactly what he's done in the generation he's got, which is to have, I think Federer must be getting up there as one of the most decorated tennis players ever in terms of majors that he's won, and Nadal as well. You know, phenomenal tennis players all round, and he's, you know, he's won Wimbledon, won a gold medal at the Olympics. He's probably helped put tennis sort of back on the map, hasn't he? Like, I mean, we've got Raducanu done that last year very well. We've had lots of sort of false dawns over the years. I've met Tim Henman, where, you know, he never quite got there. There's been a couple as well, you know, in the meantime, but he's the one that's put it right on the map, and you know, done really well for himself, and he just seems like an actual sound fella, doesn't he? Like you said before, seems really funny, really sound, and he just seems like a normal fella, doesn't he? Just a normal fella who's cracking on doing what he's doing, probably having a really good time while he's doing it as well. And you know, fair play to him, absolutely fair play to him. I reckon he'd be very interesting to talk to him, very good company.
Yeah, I reckon he would. I got a lot of time for him. I'm a big fan. I mean, I say that, I haven't watched a minute of the Australian Open, but I'm sad he's out of it. So I like him as a person. Do you know what I mean? Like at Wimbledon, I'd always watch him, but I'm not a tennis fan, but I think he's great as a personality. Also, he's really good on like a lot of political things. He's great about gender in sport. He's great about a lot of things. Good guy. But random is what we're on to. And if there are not wild cards getting lashed all over the shop, I'm going to be fuming at you. Your options were Dry January, because that follows me around. Wordle or Best Winter Holidays. Wordle won, clearly because John Gibbons has set up a load of bot accounts to be voted for it, because he loves it. But we're going to chat about Wordle. Mike, have you been playing Wordle, and how do you feel about the Twitter sharing of the blocks?
So I played with Wildcard last round, not realising Wordle had won. But yeah. I don't mind. You know, I do play it. Not that you'd know. feels like a dig done it at all the Wordle players, not that you'd know. Yeah, I've played every day and I've won. And I've been like, aren't I boss? But yeah, it's fun. And I've had a couple of chats with a couple of mates and stuff about it. And like families going, oh, today's hard and that. And trying to just avoid the incessant sharing of it online, but I think it's good. You know, it's there's lots of sub games springing up off it now, isn't there? There's the footballer name one, which, you know, if you're not really in, if
it's been taken down, I think.
Oh, has it?
Yeah.
Oh, so I'm assuming that you know them not being very
right situation, probably. Yeah.
Yeah, but you know the idea of it is someone's had that idea and it's got massively popular, and the sharing of it probably helped in that as well, hasn't it? I mean, it's a free game to play, but I don't know what the legalities are around the other games popping up and around it now, but we'll obviously get to find that out over the next couple of weeks. It's very good. Very good to start the day with it. I got my one today in two, and I was like, yes. Because I've been thinking of like my tactic is to think of one that's got at least, you know, the way you can have like a word that's just either all consonants and one vowel. I like to have two vowels and
three. Yeah.
Two vowels is a good starter, I think, and, you know, fairly popular.
I like how Mike's gone, oh, I'm not into sharing this on Twitter. By the way, to everyone listening to this, I got it in two this morning.
Gave it the old vowel 1-2 earlier.
Just absolutely killed it, you know what I mean? But, to be honest, I use a screen reader, don't I, for my phone accessibility, and I just scroll. As soon as I see Wordle or hear the word Wordle, I just scroll past because I can't be arsed with my phone. My phone just reading out green
block,
square,
block, block,
green
block,
square,
block.
Green square, white square, green square. It's like, take about half an hour to read one Wordle. I'm like, gosh, you play Wordle, is right. So that's probably my only grump with it. I just fucking scroll past and I'm like, yeah, you're playing Wordle, is right, you probably got it because you wouldn't share it. And that's what makes me laugh. I'm taking names, and I will be keeping a list of everyone who I've seen playing it, and then when they don't share it, I'll be like, ah, they were shit today, they never got it. So I'm on to you.
I feel like I should offer over Gibbo's argument about it, which was that it's nice that people are sharing it and it makes it a more collective thing, and it gives social media at least a little bit of this is a nice thing we're all
doing, yeah,
rather than the rowing. Just because Steve absolutely bodied Wordle sharing on AFQ last week, and John offered the support for it.
Counter argument.
It's not got shares in it, do you know what I mean? They're not sponsoring the rap. You just think it's nice, which is lovely. Harriet, I mean, you've used your wildcard, hun, so you've got some big chat to give me here.
So I'm not playing Wordle. I'm not, you know, not involved in it. But what I will say is that I think it's nice that it's one word a day, so people aren't getting addicted to it. You know, there's no like, you know, those apps before where people would get into it for like a week and then they would just constantly be on it. There's none of that. So it might have a bit more longevity because it's just one a day and it keeps it fresh and exciting. All I'm going to say on it is, if you like Wordle, watch Lingo on ITV.
Yes, Harriet, I like this. I like this.
Because if you're getting involved in Wordle and you're thinking, oh, I quite like this, watch Lingo. It's on at 3 p.m. and I'm not going to lie, I've had it on a bit of working from home in the background, and then I get a bit invested in it. And sometimes I'm thinking, if I miss it that day, I might go back and like put it on the ITV player because I'm that invested. And it's just fun and it's just a good time. So yeah,
excellent levels of sneaking the topic in there, Harriet. I'm a massive fan of it.
Yeah. So Wordle, Lingo, you'll love it.
Gateway drug. Joel, you saved your wild card for this exact eventuality, didn't you? So you're a clever man. What would you like to talk about? Dry January and the best winter holidays?
I think it's going to have to be Dry Jan. I mean, what I say about Wordle is that it does look pretty on the timeline, but, you know, I've not got involved. But no, I'll talk about Dry Jan because I was doing it, attempted to do it. And there's obviously health reasons about doing that, so everyone does this, fair play to them and hats off to them. But also, I think I'm now completely against it for two reasons. One, someone said to me, you know, if bars and that are sort of struggling because of COVID, and now they're going to struggle because people are doing Dry Jan and need your help. But on a much more selfish and self-centered point of view, I had like a first date last night before the time recording.
So brave saying this on here. So brave.
Does she know your history with cats, Joel?
That came up, mate. It did. I mean, that's why she put their darts. But no, I realised after doing, well, I was just doing Dry Jan last night and didn't have a drink on the date. That's I am not very good at conversing with strangers without at least one drink, which probably says
something came up
about me. It's quite concerning, but let's not open that door.
No, honestly, I'm 100% with you. Sober dates. I mean, fair play to people that manage them, but absolutely not. It's not something I'm getting involved in. No.
Oh, keep us updated, Joel. Let us know. I'm going to keep booking you every like 2 week intervals.
Update about us, we'll see.
Well, nice one. That's been your wildcards, and what a lovely time I've had with Harriet Pryor, with Joel Sanson Murray, and with my friend Mike Carney. Nice one. Whatever you're doing this weekend, enjoy it.